ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 12, Chapter 10, titled Shiva and Uma Glorify Markandeya. Text number 3 till. So what I will do is I will read till 5, then we can come to 6. Suta uvacha tamevam nirbhratatmanam vishena divipadyatan paryatan rudranyan bhagavan rudro Suda Goswami said, Lord Rudra, travelling in the sky on his bull and accompanied by his consort Rudrani as well as his personal associates, observed Markandeya in trance.
Atho matam rishim vikshya girisham samabhashata pasyemam bhagavan vipram nipradatmendriyasayam.
Goddess Uma, seeing the sage, addressed Lord Girisha. My Lord, just see this learned Brahmana, his body, mind and senses motionless in trance.
Nibhrutota jahavrato Vadapaye ethar navaha kurva asya tabasa sakshat samsiddhim siddhito bhavan.
He is as calm as the waters of the ocean. When the wind has ceased and the fish remain still, therefore, my Lord, since you bestow perfection on the performers of austerity, please award this sage the perfection that is obviously due him. So now we are coming to text 6.
Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. Naivechet Ashisha Kwapi. Naivechet Ashisha Kwapi. Brahmarshir moksham apyuta. Brahmarshir moksham apyuta. Bhaktim param bhagavati. Bhaktim param bhagavati. Labdhavan purishevyaye. Labdhavan purishevyaye.
Shri Bhagavan Vacha. The powerful Lord said, Na, not. Eva, indeed. Ichhati, desires. Ashishaha, benedictions. Kwa api, in any realm. Brahma Rishi, the saintly Brahmana. Moksham, liberation. Api uta, even. Bhaktim, devotional service. Param, transcendental. Bhagavati, for the Supreme Lord. Labdhavan, he has achieved. Purushe, for the personality of Godhead. Avyaye, who is inexhaustible. Translation: Lord Shiva replied, surely this saintly Brahmana does not desire any benediction, not even liberation itself, for he has attained pure devotional service unto the inexhaustible personality of Godhead. So here is the purport by followers of Srila Prabhupada. The words Naivechet Ashisha Kwapi indicate that Markandeya Rishi was uninterested in any reward available on any planet within the universe. Nor did he want liberation, for he had achieved the Supreme Lord himself.
ओम ज्ञानतिमिरांधस्य ज्ञानांजनशलाखया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। Hare Krishna. So in verse 3 we can see Mother Parvati and Lord Shiva, they are traveling in the sky. And apparently we can see in many places in Bhagavatam that Lord Shiva and Parvati used to travel in this way and observe what's going on. So we know the famous instance of Mother Parvati and Lord Shiva enjoying, and Maharaj Chitraketu was traveling in the airplane. So that is a different occasion. Here, there also we see the pure devotional service shown by Maharaj Chitraketu. Similarly, here it's in the different occasion where Markandeya is a pure devotee and he is in his trance. And Mother Parvati and Lord Shiva, they are traveling and they are observing Markandeya. And Mother Parvati, understanding the pure devotional service of Markandeya Rishi, he is telling something to her dear husband Lord Shiva. So here, Parvati is telling Lord Shiva that his body, mind and senses are motionless in trance. And he is as calm as the waters of the ocean when the wind has ceased and the fish remain still. So it's very interesting analogy. We can see similar analogy in Bhagavad Gita also. That is Abhuvidyamanam Ajala Pravishtam. So it is just like a mind, the mind of a devotee is just like an ocean. It is very deep. And it is very calm. So there the example is given. There are many rivers entering into the ocean. But its level doesn't change. It remains steady. That is apuryamanam achala pratishtam. Achala, it doesn't change. Pratishtam, it is just fixed. Because samudramava pravishanti yaddut. Just like the ocean is there, the big ocean is there. And to which so many rivers are flowing. So this is the nature of a devotee's mind. So it is mentioned, even different thoughts can come, but he is not agitated. It cannot influence the position of a devotee, that is his relation to the Supreme Lord and his service in that relation to the Supreme Lord. That cannot be changed. So that is the nature of a pure devotee. So when we are not pure devotees, then there will be a lot of influences from the externals. Whenever when we are in a position where we are attacked by so many different kinds of material tribulations, our devotional service get affected. So this is the difference. Because our devotion is not deep. If we are not pure devotees, if we are just trying sadhakas, then our devotion is not deep. So it can very greatly influenced if some other waters are flowing into. So by definition, pure devotional service is given as Anyabhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karmadi Anavratam Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam Bhaktir Uttama. So it has to be devoid of all kinds of material speculations, jnana, and also any tendency to perform any fruitive activities. So this is the negation, what shouldn't be there in pure devotional service. And on the positive side, it has to be Anukulyana, it has to be favorable for Krishna. Krishna Anushilanam, where Krishna can be Krishna, the personality Krishna himself, his pure devotees, his abode, his paraphernalia. So whatever is directly connected to Krishna, everything. If we are actually trying to please or if we are worshipping any of those things, then it is pure devotional service. So that is Bhakti Uttama, that is pure devotional service. And here Markandeya Rishi is showing a best example of being a pure devotee. So we can see how now Markandeya Rishi is meditating upon the Supreme Lord. The reason is Previously, Lord himself in the form of Nara, Nara and Rishi, they came in front of the Lord, in front of Markandeya, and he asked for a benediction to see the external potency, the Maya potency of the Lord, and he had to go through the whole Maya potency in the devastating waters for millions and millions of years. And at the end, he found himself to be in his ashram again performing his worship. So whatever desire he had to experience Maya, that he had to go through, and he went through. And now he's back to his meditation and he's again fixing his mind unto the Supreme Lord. So there again Mother Parvati and Lord Shiva, they saw Markandeya. And Parvati could understand the greatest of the devotion of Markandeya. So here Lord Shiva is mentioning the characteristics of such a devotee. That is, he doesn't want anything, any kinds of benediction. No liberation, he doesn't want anything. So in the purport, it is mentioned that Naivechati Ashisha Kwapi indicates Markandeya Rishi was uninterested in any reward available on any planet within the universe. So this is an interesting point to think about. So we know the rewards which are available in this planet at least. Yes? We know about money. We know about position. We know about facilities. We know about name and fame. These are very attractive. And there are many people, or most of the population, are completely driven by name, fame, facilities, money, etc. So if you see, if you just consider one person's life, how much of time is completely spent to make money? Not necessarily just for sustenance, maybe just for sustenance. But it is like from beginning. So whole, if you see a kid, the education starts from maybe 5 or 6 years old, or maybe kinder, whatever, 3, 4. There he or she starts the education. Then it is driven towards one single pointed. You know, it's just like ananya chetata. You know, in the bhakti there is ananya cheta satatam. That is one pointed devotion. In the same way, right from the beginning, the parents are actually driving the child to one pointed, how to be successful in the life materially. It is one pointed. So, you know, kids go to school, and you know, after few years, maybe grade 5, 6, then you know, some parents they say, okay, you have to work hard, you have to get into a nice school, you know, 9, 10, 11, you have to go to a, you know, big school from where they can graduate to a university, good university. So the intensity of coaching that is going through, that is just amazing. And some kids, they want to skip a grade. You know, it's already in 6 and they doesn't want to go to 7, want to go to 8. So they put extra effort. So in this way, they go up till 11, 12, then to the university. And there again, one pays a big fees. And the whole education, it is fully driven towards making money. It is for economic progress. So if you see the whole world, sometimes people have a misconception that the universities are the places of education, the places of knowledge. But if you really analyze what kind of knowledge is given, okay, on one side we can say, yes, it is Maya, because it is helping one to forget Krishna. But on the other side, actually, if you just consider the material knowledge, that analyze and understand the material knowledge, understand the material world, the education system has gone far away from understanding even the material creation, even the material things what is around us. So it was an interesting thing. One professor was mentioning, now even in the departments of philosophy, there is not much funding coming through. So it is pretty hard, because in the philosophical department they don't have so much of potential in terms of being as an economic unit. Why the universities get money? The reason is because they can support some kind of research which can produce some technology which can be marketed and turned into more money. So they attract grants from government, they attract so much grants from so many different companies. So if they cannot produce money, then that grant will not come. So the whole idea about education is nothing but making money. So if you do any kind of degree, at the end of the day, if they cannot attract money, then it is useless. It is useless waste of time. As in Bhagavatam we say, you know, whatever activities we do, if it cannot please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then it is Shrama Eva Hi Kevalam. In the same way, whatever education one does, ultimately it cannot make money, then it is Shrama Eva Hi Kevalam. So it was interesting because I was in process and I met with one researcher. He was my colleague before. So I asked him, how is life going? So he was telling, yeah, still surviving. He's in Melbourne Uni. So I said, I'm still going on. Things are fine. He said, he didn't say things are fine. On the first level, he said, yeah, things are not bad. Everything is going alright. Then I asked, okay, are you working with so and so? Yes, I am working with so and so. He replied. Then I asked, you know, how is your research going? He said, yes, research is there. One can produce as many papers as possible. One can publish good publications in good journals. Yeah, one can do that. So one can come up as a very nice researcher. That's fine. But at the end of the day, if we cannot bring money in, then you are considered a failure. So this is academic research. This is academic research. And we think about the fact, if somebody is doing some research and that you're spending millions of dollars, and if they don't produce any result, think about the situation. Somebody is attracting grants from a company or from the government, millions of dollars, and at the end of the day there is no result. What do you think? Will it be a good situation for his career? Will it be good for the university? No. So there is cheating propensity. So when one cannot sustain one's position, then one try to cheat. So this is another person in the similar field. So I was talking to him. So he was telling, yes, you know, many people produce many papers, many publications. So he was mentioning, but when it comes to experimental data, there is a little bit of adjustments. You know, because no one can, you know, go and check all these kind of things. It's practically difficult if somebody has done an experiment which would have taken for him, you know, many months to perform. So one has to accept as it is, pretty much. Or if in due course of time, if somebody is actually doing the similar experiment, one could find something, okay, there is something wrong. But that will end to another paper. It is mentioned one can do a PhD on one topic and one can come up with so many results, and another person can do research in the same topic and he can prove that whatever the other person has done is everything is wrong, and he can get another PhD. So this is how it is. So, you know, this is the kind of knowledge we are in. So in reality, if we check the material knowledge, what's going through, it is not real knowledge, even just considering material speaking, because there is cheating involved. And people have to produce something. Another thing, in one of the famous universities, they got many, many millions of dollars to build cyclotron, Bevatron, all these kind of things. Basically, the idea is particle accelerators. So now the research is such that everyone knows that, you know, collide the particles, accelerate the fundamental particles to a great degree, to a high velocity, and then collide, and then whatever comes out from that, we can understand what is the real nature of the material world. So in fact, I was reading in one of the scientific books, it is a contradiction the way in which we are trying to understand the material world. So this is a scientist himself is mentioning. The point is, suppose if you want to understand about car, so the approach is you collide two cars in very high velocity. So naturally there is going to be wreckage, you know, there will be parts will be coming off. And from there try to understand what a car is. So in terms of the material creation, pretty much how we are understanding the material creation is based on the same principle. That is, get a cyclotron, millions of dollars, and then collide few particles. And whatever the end result, these trajectories are marked. And initially, you know, the thousands of photographs are taken and then analyze and find out with a great computational complexity, because previously they used to analyze with the eyes. Now they use softwares too, because it involves huge amount of manipulation, huge amount of computational power required to come out with some results. So at the end of the day, if these results are useless, if they can't produce anything, do you think, is there a possibility like that? No way. Because They cannot. It is a question of their bread and butter. They had to feed their wife and kids and whoever, and they had to feed themselves. So some result has to come. So some result will come somehow or other. So this is material knowledge. Now, when it comes to pure devotion service, this is completely different. Because pure devotion service is completely based on satisfaction of the Supreme Lord. It is different in nature. Okay, we'll come to that. Now, so the material creation in the material science has developed so many conveniences. And we are enamored by such conveniences. Devotees as well as non-devotees. Even devotees to some degree, as well as we are not pure, to some degree we are enamored by material technology. So we know the famous statement by Prabhupada in this regard a few times. One time was in MIT, where many Indian students were there. Not many, a few were there. And they were quite puffed up because it was quite difficult to get to MIT at that point of time. It's 30, 35 years back. Then when Srila Prabhupada was presenting his talk on body and soul, these boys, they actually questioned Prabhupada. They said, India's production, Indians are not supposed to present this kind of stuff. Because we want technology. We are lacking technology. And Swamiji, you are just speaking about this Bhagavad Gita. What's the use? So Prabhupada actually put them in their place. Prabhupada said, you came here to beg technology, but I came here to give. So there is a difference between you and me. Basically he said, you are a beggar and I am actually giving something. So this is a fact. So when we think we are subservient to the technology, when we think we are subservient to whatever is happening around us in terms of materialism, we cannot strongly preach Krishna consciousness. At the same time, when we understand, okay, we are presenting this philosophy of Krishna consciousness, but at the same time, we use whatever is presented by the technology in service of Krishna. There we don't have any hesitation. So it's like Prabhupada says the example of Ajagravrti. There is a snake and there is a hole created by a rat. So what does snake do? Snake go into the hole and eat the rat and stay in that hole. So Prabhupada said, this is the way we have to actually use the technology. Yes, we criticize. We heavily criticize the material science. We heavily criticize all these things. But whatever has to come through, if it is useful in Krishna service, then we do use it. So that is seeing Krishna everywhere. That is Yukta Vairagya. For the simple reason being, where this intelligence coming from? Matak Sumudhi Jnanam Apohanam Cha. The intelligence, memory, everything is coming from Krishna alone. As 9th chapter in Bhagavad Gita gives a beautiful verse, lists all different kind of even material qualities. And then Krishna says, okay, it's all coming from me. So this is the position. So we have all the right to understand, we have all the right to find fault in the material technology, in the material science, in the material creation, in that respect. But at the same time, use everything in Krishna service. This is Yukta Vairagya. This is the principle of utility. At the same time, one has to be very careful while utilizing material creation or material technology in service of Krishna. Because we say usually Yukta Vairagya, but when it comes to the definition, Nirbandha Krishna Sambandha Yuktam Vairagyam Uchyate. So I was thinking, Nirbandha Krishna Sambandha Krishna Yuktam Vairagyam Uchyate. Okay, Yukta Vairagya is nothing but connecting it to Krishna. So Krishna Sambandha Yuktam Vairagyam Uchyate. And before that, that father of the verse starts with one word, that is Nirbandha. So that is a very significant word even for the devotees to understand. Nirbandha means unattached. So even though we use many things, the challenge is we shouldn't be attached. There it is a challenge even for us. When we use technology, when we use different things in service of Krishna, it can be anything, facilities, it can be money, this, that, anything. Still, not being attached to that and use only for the pleasure of Krishna, that is a challenge. So that's where we have to actually check ourselves. Where is our consciousness? Otherwise we can get attached and we can forget the pleasure of Krishna and we can think about pleasure of ours. And now, Here, in terms of Markandeya Rishi, Markandeya Rishi doesn't want anything from any of the creation, from our middle planetary system, upper planetary system, or lower planetary system. So think about that position, because in upper planetary system, there is beautiful gardens, you know, Nandakanana, there are, you know, beautiful trees, there is, you know, natural beauty, beautiful association with opposite sex, beautiful beverages to drink, so many nice things to eat, and there is no disease. That is a big advantage. There is no disease. Apparently, there is no old age. It said, okay, the old age in the heavenly planet is nothing but everyone wears beautiful fresh garland, you know, like this is Maha garland, some nice garland they wear, but at the end of the day they can see, the last day they can see the garland is actually a bit rotten and it is shade, you know, it is going off. Then they actually go into anxiety. It's not that, that time there is no anxiety. Then they understand, yes, this is finished. My term is finished. Then they become anxiety and ultimately they had to come back to earth. Kshinai punya marti lokam vishanti. So, when the credit is finished, then come back. Still, it is very attractive because of the time. Because of the time. Because think about and consider an ant. For an ant situation, and maybe I don't know the lifespan of an ant, consider it is few days or whatever. Then, considering a human's lifespan, 60 or 70 or 80 years, compared to this few days, it is too much. It is beyond the conception of an ant. So he thinks, the ant thinks, okay, human life is not bad. It's better to be in that position. Mm-hmm. And the ant thinks, look, there is this one grain of, or a few grains of sugar, and we are running all the way just to get a few drops of few grains. And the whole assembly of ants are coming, and few ants, one particle of sugar is there, few ants are actually pushing it aside and bringing it to one position, and all of them are eating. And whereas, in terms of human beings, you know, it's like sacks. The sugar, you know, if you go to a supermarket, it's just so much of sugar. If you go to the bhoga, so much of sugar. So, considering in terms of the bhoga available, something that which is to enjoy, so much. And they can think, look, for a human being, the position of ant is insignificant. If we walk around, we can kill, if we are unnoticed, we can kill so many ants. You know, just we don't even know that we are killing few ants. So in terms of strength, consider an ant and human being. Similarly, consider an human being and demigods, the residents of the heavenly planets. They are in such an opulent position. They have so much of power. They can read the mind. They can control. In fact, even corresponding to all our senses, there are demigods in charge. For the eyes, for the nose, for the head, for the mind, for the health. So for everything, there is demigods who can control. And interesting enough, they can control the health of all the living beings. It's not just one person for one demigod, but one demigod has so much of power to control so many. It's like Surya, sun is the predominating deity for health. You know, so I was explaining one day how people do Surya Upasana. Some people, they have given up everything, not everything. They go and sit in the morning sun few hours, open their eyes, sit straight and look at the sun. And few people have achieved perfection in that kind of Surya Upasana, that they don't have to eat anything. It's a fact, there are a few people who they don't have to eat anything. They can just sit straight. And, you know, this is so the sun has its power, it has its potency. So they can give, they are in a much better position and they can reward so many things. But for a pure devotee, he doesn't want such a position. And lower planetary system, there is actually Bila Sorga. It's not bad. When we think about lower planetary system, the only conception we have is it's only suffering. But there are some places where the material facilities are very high. It is called Bila Sorga. Bila means the hole or under the earth. There is a Sorga there as well. So there is also, you know, sinful people, they have their own way of pleasurable enjoyment. So that is there. But for a pure devotee, he doesn't want anything. ന നാഗപൃഷ്ടം ന പാരമേഷ്ഠ്യം ന സാർവഭൗമം ന രസാധിപത്യം ന യോഗസിദ്ധ അപുനർഭവം വാ സമഞ്ജസത്വ വിരഹയ്യ കാംക്ഷേ. ദിസ് ഇസ് ആക്ച്വലി എ വേഴ്സ് ബൈ വൃത്രാസുരൻ. The fourth main verse, the second verse is this. So the same verse is actually interesting enough, only the last line of the verse is changed. In the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam also, the same verse is there. It's very interesting. But the last line is different. So here, Naivechyati Ashita Kwapi. He indicated that Markandeya Rishi was uninterested in any reward available on any planet within the universe. So any planet within the universe. So this is the position of a pure devotee. So he's in that verse, which is quoted in 6 as well as the 11th canto, we can see a similar point. That is, na nakaprishtam. So there the nakaprishtam is actually the lower planet, where the nagas are residing. Na parameshtyam, the highest planet. He doesn't want the highest planet. Even if it is awarded, I don't want that. Think about it, there is energy. Don't think it is, we see this verse and we think, yes, a pure devotee, he doesn't want anything. Okay, we can think in that way, but when we try to understand, we have to understand, consider a conditioned living being, he's awarded a position, he's awarded material opulence. So this material opulence, the material power, it has a power, it has energy. So when we are attacked by some energy, when we are attacked by power, then we need sufficient power to resist. You see, if somebody attacks, we need some power. We can easily understand. Depending on the power in which, if it is a great power, if a person is very, very strong and is punching, then we need more power to defend ourselves. And if somebody is attacking with a weapon, if the power of the weapon is very high, then we need to be so strong that somehow or other we can counteract. Similarly, when it comes to material power, in the material potencies or material benediction, that has its power, it has its strength. So we need some strength to say no to it. It will not happen automatically. And that strength is the strength of devotion. And for a pure devotee, the strength of a pure devotee means pure bhakti for Krishna. And that is the most, it has the most potency, it has the most power. So that can resist any kinds of award or any kind of bribe, in other words. Any kind of bribe. Say, there are many government offices, especially if you go to India, bribe is accepted in most of the places. So one need, on a material level, one need a high principle, a moral principle to say no to bribe. Because it is very attractive. In the same way, we are placed in this position and we are trying to practice devotional service. And when the bribe comes in the form of material facilities and the desire to enjoy those material facilities, we need the sufficient spiritual strength to say no to it. Means that spiritual strength is nothing but our attraction for Krishna. Our attachment to serve Krishna. That is the only strength. Then, it is mentioned, na nakaprishtam, na parameshtyam, na sarvabhaumam. Na sarvabhauma means being in the position of a Lord Brahma, you can control everything of one universe. Na rasadhipatyam, I don't want even the position to control the rasatal planet. Na yoga siddhim apunarbhavam va. So it comes to two more levels. That is, na yoga siddhim, I don't even want yoga siddhi, perfection of a mystic yoga. Becoming smaller than the smallest, bigger than the biggest, anima, manima, lakhima, prakti, etc. So he's telling, no, I don't want even that. Then finally, apunarbhavam va. So this is again very interesting. Apunarbhavam. Apunarbhavam means, I don't even want freedom from repeated birth and death. So this is a point, again we can think. Srila Rupa Goswami mentions this is a final snare of Maya. That is, freedom from repeated birth and death. Because all the suffering is due to repeated birth and death. Because of material existence, we are suffering. And now, somebody is avoiding that. Okay, there is no question of material birth and death. There is no question of suffering. That is very, very attractive. So, this is considered as the attack of witch. It's a black witch. A black art of a witch. This attraction for liberation is considered black art of a witch, Rupa Goswami says. So that is another attack. So if one has to say even that to know, so how much devotion one should have for Krishna? Even when one is suffering, still if one is somebody saying, yes, I don't want that. I don't want to get rid of the suffering because I want to serve Krishna. That is a very, very high consciousness. And that is what is demanded of a pure devotee. Or ultimately, that's what is demanded from us. So we are actually entrapped by small pleasures. So ultimately, even in the biggest danger, even in the biggest calamity, one has to say, it's okay, I am ready to serve Krishna. This is a challenge we have in front of us. So then we can actually, so we had to take small steps towards that. We will have to take small steps in pleasing Krishna. Then we can take a bigger step, and then a bigger step. So if you don't try to please Krishna now with small steps, it can be through any service. We may have different kinds of service, but in any service, if you don't think, okay, this is to please Krishna, then it is very difficult to make progress. So initially we may do service, we may do chanting for the sake, as matter of duty. We don't put our heart or we don't actually become very attentive or focused. We just do as the sake of, yes, I am a devotee, I had to do some service, I'll do it. Yes, that's fine. But when we had to make progress, then we had to consciously think, okay, this is to please Krishna. So then one can think what is best to please Krishna. So this is the way we can actually drive our consciousness in terms of pleasing Krishna. So here, Markandeya Rishi has come to that platform. He is ready to say no to anything. So that is, you know, apunar bhavamva. He doesn't care about the question of, you know, repeated birth and death. So we can see even great devotees, like even Mahaprabhu's pastime, Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur, he writes in the beginning of the verse, he says, Kaivalyam Narakayate. Kaivalyam Narakayate. We have heard about Narak. We have heard about hell. How is hell? Is there any nice, wonderful description about hell? It's only the hellish description means really hellish. It's all hellish description. What is that? Embracing a form made of, you know, hot iron. You know, frying you in the, you know, we fry pakoras in the same way, fry us in oil. And, you know, all this kind of, you know, walking on the fire. And it is mentioned that's the end of third canto, how a small description is given about the hell, you know, end of fourth canto. That is, even somebody is dragging a great distance, but you know, it feels like, you know, it's like, you know, constantly somebody is dragging, you know, pulling me down all the time, and he is feeling the pain all the time. So this is a kind of you know, narak. This is a kind of hellish suffering. So it is not at all pleasurable. It's just painful. And if you think about it, we say we don't want it. And if somebody is telling, okay, I don't mind going to hell if I can serve Krishna, that is a high consciousness, definitely. And Prabodhananda Saraswati, he goes to another platform. He says, Kaivalyam Narakayate. So he says, the cessation of all kinds of material suffering and merging into impersonal Brahman, where there is Brahmanand, that is equivalent to Kaivalyam Narakayate. So that is equivalent to hell. So Prabhupada calls it spiritual suicide. So we had to understand what is the standard of pure devotion. It is very high. It is really very high. So that is the reason even in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, okay, we had to tolerate Matrasparshastakamteya Sitoshna Samadukhada Agamo Payano Nityam Tam Titiksha Sabharata. So initially it is given, okay, simple instructions, okay, whether it is heat or cold, when it's pleasurable or whatever, still we have to actually, in terms of our application, we have to still go on in our devotional service. Because if we can't tolerate such simple thing, then we won't be able to pass any greater test. So this is the reality. So here Markandeya is giving such a wonderful example of tolerance. In fact, he can tolerate, he's tolerating his mind, he's tolerating his senses and body, motionless in trance. He's worshipping the Supreme Lord. And with that, Mother Parvati said, okay, this is time due, you know, you have to do something about it. So we can see Lord Shiva, he is Ashutosh. He can be easily pleased. And that's the reason he even gets pleased to demons when they perform some austerities. It doesn't take too much of a time. Ravana, he actually pleased Lord Shiva. So, you know, still the benediction that Lord Shiva gave in that context, he just acted as a demigod. He just acted as a demigod. Because as a demigod, he's like, you know, if you go to a bank, there's a teller there. The business of the teller is, if you go with a check, you know, if it is due to you, then you give the checkbook and he will encash it, he'll give you the money back. So demigods can act as tellers. Because if you do the sufficient austerities according to the Vedic rules, it's a different system, that's all. Then they have to, okay, it's their duty, they give the benefit. In the same way, Lord Shiva, he is Ashutosh. He gives the benediction to what is required for a conditioned soul performing austerities according to the Vedic principles. And he gives away and he just leaves. However, here Lord Shiva is not acting in that way. Here actually Lord Shiva is acting as Param Vaishnava. As it is mentioned in Bhagavatam, Vaishnavanam Yathashambhu. He is one of the greatest of the Vaishnavas. So Lord Shiva, we can see in the following verses, he will act as a pure Vaishnava. As a great devotee, he doesn't act in the capacity of a demigod. Okay. Generally, demigods are Vaishnavas, but they're not necessarily that they're pure devotees. But in case of Shiva, he's a pure devotee. So he will act as a pure devotee. Just like the sons of Prajina Bahushit, the Prachetas, when they approached Lord Shiva and they wanted to worship the Supreme Lord, they performed austerities underwater, and after that, when they met with Lord Shiva, Lord Shiva, again, he didn't act as a demigod. He acted in the capacity of a pure Vaishnava. He gave the Krishna mantra by which Prachetas can worship the Supreme Lord Hari and go back home, back to Godhead. So in the same way here, Markandeya, since he is completely devoid of any tinge of material desires, he will approach Lord Shiva and ask for bhakti towards Krishna. Let me never forget Krishna. So this is the benediction that Markandeya asked for. And Lord Shiva acts as a pure Vaishnava and he gives that benediction. So here we can see the glory of both Markandeya Rishi as well as Lord Shiva. So here I stop and see if there are any comments or questions.
Yeah? I want to comment when you were telling about that thing. I was thinking of Draupadi. When Dushasana was trying to derobe her, she tried her best, she approached everybody.
Yeah.
And nobody had any Krishna Hare.
Yeah.
And Krishna. Because she wanted to do pure process of Krishna. So she just sat.
Thank you. Yeah.
It was not until Shiva was his virgin master or gave him any instructions beforehand or any connection with his commercial service really after that point, it seems, where he encountered him now. But still he was going to give him a benediction. So is that like a quality of devotees in general, that when they become pleased by a person's commercial service, they give benedictions, even though they weren't the one who actually gave the instruction or anything like that?
You mean you are asking the connection between Markandeya and Lord Shiva?
Yes, or, and then also what is the nature of a devotee, like Lord Shiva being such a devotee that he's giving these benedictions to Mahadev Rishi, but he didn't give him any special instructions beforehand or anything like that, but he's seeing his devotion and his peace life and he's ready to give him a benediction then.
Okay. By nature, Lord Shiva is very merciful. Lord Shiva, he has a lot of compassion. Lord Shiva is personification of compassion. He's, you know, we say, okay, when we talk about Lord Shiva, on one level, we usually say, oh, we don't worship Shiva, you know, we reject everything. Yes, which is true, because our tendency is to reject, and, you know, our tendency to consider anyone as supreme. Like Lord Shiva, we consider Lord Shiva as supreme, this is supreme, that is supreme, because that is our conditioning. And we have strong tendency to do so. That's the reason we say, okay, we don't worship Lord Shiva. We say we don't worship Lord Shiva, we worship only Krishna. Similarly, we can see even Ganesh. You know, there is instruction in Nectar Devotion to worship Lord Ganesh. But we don't worship. Rather, Prabhupada introduced worship of Narasimhadev, because Ganesh is getting his power from Narasimhadev. So, because we have this strong tendency. But when we try to understand Lord Shiva, he has such a compassion that he is even ready to save lower entities like Bhutas. You know, the who are Bhutas?
Ghost.
He's ready to help them as well. So that is the nature of Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva is known as Bhutanath. His another name is Bhutanath, because he gives shelter to Bhutas. So we have to see the compassion of Lord Shiva. In the same way, devotees are also compassionate. So if we generally consider the nature of devotees, devotees try to help sometimes, you know, even people who do not want to be helped. They consider themselves to be okay. They consider themselves to be happy. And they consider themselves, I don't need any medicine. Even I am not sick, I don't need any medicine. But devotees understand they are sick and they need to be administered with some medicine. So devotees go out of their way and they actually try to help other people. So devotees can give instructions considering the situation, no matter whether they really want it or no. They can try to help. So generally the nature of the devotees is that even if somebody is, or most of the case it is that many people are not interested in the spiritual life, but still we try to help other people. Is right? That is the principle of preaching. So Lord Shiva is actually showing in many places, you know, his position, how he gives his compassion to many living entities. Then specifically Krishna Bhakti and Krishna Mantra he gives to people who are qualified. Specifically, we can see that Pratyadas, they were in that position. Here we can see Markandeya. But generally he gives, when somebody is qualified, then he gives. So Lord Shiva can give bhakti because he is a pure devotee. Similarly, devotees can give bhakti to others also. So that's the principle of preaching. Is that okay? Okay. Anything else? Yeah.
We have to see this is what we see in here, and people go to, you know, the Shiva's temple and they water.
Yeah. Okay. Question is, if we go to Lord Shiva's temple and offer water and milk and ask for bhakti towards Krishna, is it bona fide or not? Okay, now, yes, definitely it is bona fide. We can see Lord Chaitanya, when he traveled to South India, he went to many Shiva temples. One famous temple Lord Chaitanya went is in Orissa, is in Bhuvaneshwar. That is Lingaraj temple. It's a beautiful temple.
Yeah.
Lingaraj temple. So Lord Chaitanya went in front of Lingaraj and he started dancing. And he started glorifying Lord Shiva. Because of considering his devotion to the Supreme Lord, Lord Chaitanya worshipped him. He danced. He praised him. So it is possible. And there the original system was that there is Lingaraj temple and next to that there is Ananta Vasudev temple. So the original system was that first it's a small temple of Vasudev. They offer bhoga to Ananta Vasudev and then the remnants is offered to Lingaraj. And Lingaraj used to accept. But I heard recently or few years back or whatever, they have stopped that tradition. So that is the actual prasadam offering, like from Vishnu to Shiva, and then we can accept. That is fine. So again, Maha Maha Prasad we are getting of Lord Shiva. So that is acceptable. Now, as you are exactly pointing to your question, yes, it is bona fide to offer offerings to water, milk, etc. to Lord Shiva and ask for benediction of bhakti, but there is a catch. If our consciousness is not purified, and if we already had some attachment to demigods, and then we will ask, you know, okay, at one position one can ask also, give me something. You are Ashutosh, so I don't have a job, give me a job. or I am lacking this thing very badly, one can actually approach Lord Shiva for a wrong reason. That can also happen. So one has to be very careful, even when we are approaching a pure Vaishnava like Lord Shiva, because we have the enjoying propensity and we can ask for material benedictions. So one has to be very careful. So that's the reason we can see even the devotee do not disrespect any of the demigods. So one of the instructions given in Nectar of Devotion is that among the 64 items, you know, one should never disrespect demigods. We don't disrespect demigods, but at the same time, we don't worship them in the temple because we have a strong tendency to ask for material benediction. So we are actually taught, even ultimately we shouldn't, like Markandeya Rishi, we are taught, we have to come to a platform, we are not even asking material benediction, even from the Supreme Lord Himself. Even though it is mentioned in second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, akama sarva kama va moksha kama udaradhi tivrayana bhakti yogena yajayata purusham param. One can approach the Supreme Lord akama without any material desire, or with all material desires, or for moksha, for liberation. One can approach tivrayana bhakti yogena with intense devotion. Yajayata purusham param. It is possible. Still, this is given, yes. It is possible, but we are taught not to. So even to approach Krishna, one has to eliminate the material desires through, again, continuing devotional service. So when it comes to demigods, then there is a danger that one can get entrapped into approaching the Lord for a material benediction, that is, a demigod for a material benediction, and getting reciprocation and going sidetracked. I can give you a classic example. Not exactly, you know, there are temples, for instance, I have seen temples in India, where the main deity is Vishnu. It's a massive temple, a big, huge Vishnu deity. And people go, they worship. And there will be some Upadevatas, that is some demigods. And there will be some Upadevatas, it will be a small deity of the Upadevata, one demigod. And there will be, you know, 50 people, you know, they will be doing the whole lot of things. They will be paying more attention to a particular demigod than Vishnu. And it has happened some temple that there are one main deity, maybe Vishnu, and other some demigod. The temple is known for the demigod. Even though the main temple is for someone, for Lord Vishnu, the temple is known for some demigod. Because this is our nature. So we have this tendency, so one has to be careful, that's all. When we analyze an old point of view. Otherwise, it's bona fide. If one's consciousness is okay.
On the same, in Nandigram also, the devotees are giving
Krishna. Yes.
Or Lord
Krishna. Yes. Because he is Gopishwar. Yes. Gopishwar Mahadev. He is Lord Shiva. He is the protector of the Dham. That's the reason Lord Shiva is in Vrindavan as well as in Bhuvaneshwar, because Puri is nearby. So he is the Dwara, you know, he is the Palak, he is the protector of Puri. That is the service.
Yes.
Yeah, I understood the question. So the point one has to understand, the mood shouldn't be, or the desire shouldn't be, going back home, back to Godhead. We are not asking, Krishna, when are you getting me? You know, when can I go to Goloka Vrindavan? That shouldn't be the mood. The mood should be as it is given in the Shastra. What is the mood? Yeah, I don't want any, I just want you, I want to please you. You want to do devotional service to please you. That has to be the mood of devotion. And if you perform devotional service in that mood, then one will go back home, back to Godhead. If Krishna desires. You understand the difference? The mood is not asking Krishna when is the next flight. That's not the mood. You know, you have sent Pushpak Viman for Dhruva Maharaj, and we have heard about Ajamal. When is my turn? like waiting in a tram stop or something. When is the next tram? Okay, I'll check in my phone. When is the tram stop? Is the tram coming? No, that shouldn't be the mood. The mood has to be this. Then as a result of that, go back home, back to Godhead. So, another reason Prabhupada stressed this point, then we understand the destination and we become serious in our devotional service. And when we become serious in our devotional service, then we get the right mood of understanding we don't want these things, but we want devotion. But as a result, that is the end result, is again the same. Back home, back to Godhead. Even if one is purified, like Prabhupada, he is in the apparently he is in the material world, but he is not in the material world. For a pure devotee, the whole spiritual world is manifested for him. You know, he is not in the material world. Even though he is in the material world. So, for an elevated devotee, maybe he has to preach something to deliver other conditions. Also, we may not be in that position. So, you know, ultimately, even when we say Golok Vrindavan, it's the consciousness also that is there. A pure devotee apparently can be in the material world, still he is in the Golok Vrindavan. So that is the difference between mood and... Mood has to be this. This has to be, as Markandeya is showing, that has to be the mood. Then the result is not up to us. So Prabhupada said the result, that's all. It doesn't mean we have to meditate on the result all the time. That's not for a devotee. That's not the primary desire. Ultimately, that's not the desire. Is not going back to Godhead. As that's the reason, you know. Okay, even you know, it's a classic question. Classic question, actually. You know, okay. I came into temple. You know, I became a devotee and, you know, started devotional service. I went home. Then, you know, people ask, you know, this kind of question. You know, especially in India, the people, they know something about devotion. So they ask this kind of, so you are with this corner, all right, that's fine. So how many people have, you know, how many people have seen Krishna? No. You know, this, you know, chitta, you know, this kind of, you know, not respecting, disrespectful. So how many people have seen Krishna? This kind of question. So that's the reason when this question comes, Prabhupada says, what's the point? Our philosophy is not to just see Krishna, how to serve Krishna, right? So why we don't bother about, you know, whether where we are actually speaking, you know, are we going Golok Vrindavan, you know, what is our position? That's not our primary meditation at this point, right? But how to serve Krishna? So Prabhupada says, okay, after seeing God, what's next? So our whole philosophy is, what are we going to do after seeing God? That is the whole, you know, Panjanga Bhakti. Everything is actually the whole Bhakti process. 64 items in Namanga Bhakti. Everything is what is the principle of Namanga Bhakti? Now with the bhakti, the 9 process of devotional service. It is how to serve Krishna. So our philosophy is centered around how to serve Krishna. It's not simply seeing Krishna. Not simply going back home, back to Godhead. How to serve Krishna. So devotee's focus is how to serve Krishna. So if that is not our focus, then, you know, what kind of a devotee are we? You see the difference? So, you know, we don't say, you know, Krishna... Is there any famous prayer by any of the acharyas? You know, I want to go back home. You know, you cannot see that kind of, you know, you know, Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. The meaning is, you know, O Supreme Lord, along with your energy, you know, how can I engage in your devotional service? Service. We are das. You know, initiation means das. We are addressed as das. At least we have to understand that point. That's the knowledge. Even for chapter of Bhagavad Gita, when the term Gyan is used, as Prabhupada explains, that Gyan is understanding that I am servant of Krishna and I have to act to please Krishna. That is the Gyan. There is no other Gyan, is, you know, what's the use? You know, connecting to that, you know, many devotees were asking, what's the meaning of my name? What's the meaning, you know, people had different names, so, you know, whatever das, you know. You know, my name is Gopurundes Das, this Das, that Das. So Prabhupada, everyone was asking Prabhupada, what is the meaning of this name? What is the meaning of my name? Yes, Prabhupada said, when it came to a point, Prabhupada said, look, do you know what is the meaning of the last word of your name, Das? They said, yes, servant. If you understand that, that is enough. If you really understand, that is sufficient. Even if you don't understand, you know, the whole terminology, if you understand you are servant of Krishna and if you act in that way, then... That's fine. So, our whole idea is, are we doing service to Krishna? Are we trying to please Krishna and his devotees? If yes, then result is guaranteed. If not, start doing that. That's all. Okay? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Grantha Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Shiva Prabhupada ki. Samveda Bhaktavrinda ki. Jai Nitya Gaur Premande.